Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Justin and Heidi Unfiltered podcast. This is Justin.
And I'm Heidi.
Thanks for listening. So Heidi and I talked about some stuff over the holidays, and we decided, after kind of inadvertently taking a little break, because I didn't set these up to record them. It's on me. It's my fault. We're going to come back, and it's going to be less about hairstylists for a while. Almost nothing about hairstylists for a while. Talk about our marriage, what we've learned, things that we've gone through, raising kids, our membership in our church, and other aspects.
Kind of like how the reason why we took a hiatus from the podcast is because Justin got a job. Yay, Justin.
Yay, Justin.
But that also meant he kind of spiraled. So we're going to go through that just a little bit.
Who knew we should talk about that at some point too?
Yeah.
Who knew that that would make me spiral?
Yeah.
How is getting a job stressful? Not having a job for 4 months was stressful. Everything's stressful.
But you kind of lived your best life for 4 months.
I really did. And almost no video games were had.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Which is the first.
Yeah.
At least in our marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can confirm. We decided that the first topic we're going to talk about is addiction. Specifically, my long-term addiction to pornography. And I say other addictions, but they're kind of byproducts. They're separate addictions. Overeating. I mean, my highest weight a year and a half ago was 437 pounds. I'm a big dude. I definitely overeat. And spending money. That one, I mean, you're never really over addictions, especially the ones that become like chemical dependencies. So I'm not going to say I'm over my addiction to spending money, but it is pretty well controlled. And that's good.
Yeah. I mean, we've set up some boundaries. You have a harder time to get around that with me.
Yeah.
You can't hide it as much.
No. And I would definitely recommend those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me twitches when I hear in shows or in other TV shows or in conversations with people how a guy will have a separate account that his wife doesn't know about. It's like, they shudder.
Well, yeah, but you did that.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Would not recommend.
Well, not if you want a really actual happy marriage.
Yeah. So we'll go back in the next several podcasts. We're going to talk about some
key points.
I was going to say milestones, but key points is probably a better way to say it. Key points in that journey. And we're going to start with the most recent one, which was in August 2024.
I would say that was probably the hardest part of our marriage.
It was a rock bottom.
Yeah.
So if you've ever watched Intervention, it's this show on, there's a few seasons on Netflix. I don't know what, A&E maybe, I don't know. The therapists that are on that, or the interventionists that are on that, they say one of the key points of one of these being successful is the person has to hit rock bottom. And they take this drug addict or this alcoholic, and they get them when they're at their rock bottom. Like, they're living their rock bottom. They've been there, or they're really close. And they tell the family members, we've got to get them there. Sometimes they have to push them. You have to set boundaries and say, I'm not going to help you anymore. We're not going to communicate. You don't get to see my kids, whatever. I reached this rock bottom on my own. In the last recording we did, this is a re-recording. I went through details and I didn't like it. If you would like to share any specific details, you go ahead. I'm not ashamed, but I don't want to talk about it.
Are you feeling shame? You're not ashamed, but you're kind of feeling shame.
Yeah.
Mm.
It makes me feel icky.
Well, I mean, what happened, and it's probably true for most people, is something stupid happened. You got mad at me over something stupid.
Yeah.
And I was mad at you for something stupid, but mine was kind of more justified stupid. But they were both still stupid. Which, I mean, we're married. We've gone through those many times in our married life. But the reaction that came afterwards was where I think you were nearing your, the end of your rope, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
He did put hands on me. And it's one of those where, you know, we counseled with our bishop, our ecclesiastical leader, and everyone was trying to make sure that I was okay, but I never felt unsafe.
If anyone was really in danger, it was me.
I truly believe that.
Yeah.
But you did put hands on me, and I did not knee you in the nuts, but I told you I was going to.
Yes. You grazed them.
And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely were close to taking me
down. But I was going to. But that's yeah. where you really turned inward on yourself and thought, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
Because then you did start sleeping in the other room, and it was a low point. It wasn't great for either of us.
Right.
But it's not like we were throwing the divorce word around or anything like that. But it was if we're going to continue, something has to change, because it wasn't okay.
Yeah. And I think that's why, like, everybody's rock bottom is different. You know, for me, sleeping in the next room was miles away from you. And that was absolutely my rock bottom. I hated it. I was miserable.
Well, and you chose to sleep there because I was the one that was sleeping on the couch the first night.
Yeah, you did not want to share a bed.
Or a room.
Or a room. So the option was either I'm in our room on our bed and you're on the couch, or I'm in the other room.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
So yeah, you picked that one.
Yeah.
Very noble.
Well, thanks. I mean, the good decisions had to start somewhere.
It's true.
And in that moment, in that week, yeah, during that timeline, about a week or so, maybe it was a little more than a week, 10 days. I was still using pornography on a regular basis.
Which I didn't know about.
Right. Right.
Because he had faced his pornography addiction, and we did put safeties in place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once an addict, always an addict. So, lesson learned.
Yeah. So, there was a lot. There was a lot for us to go through. And my underlying issue is the addiction to pornography, because when you look back at my overeating,
overspending,
my overspending, my anger,
lying,
I mean, these really are more byproducts, some more than others, but really the pornography addiction is the thing that has the highest concentration of those neurotransmitters and those hits of dopamine and endorphins that come from use that had been, I mean, I had made those pathways in my brain. Like they were cleared pathways, you know, they might as well have been 6-lane highways. If I was stressed or angry or whatever, I mean, yeah, I would use, but also I would use just cause you know, it was time to use. So, but it was a chemical dependency. So what I realized also is, well, first of all, I had to get help. So I started to see a counselor. I guess I made the appointment with the bishop first, and then we talked about going to see a counselor. So that took a couple of weeks. But I had decided I was done with pornography. And that was a really dangerous time, I'm finding out. As I'm in, because right now I'm in a group therapy. It's like a 12-week course. We're like a week 8 because the holiday set it back 3 weeks. But I'm also still seeing counsel on a regular basis and will continue to.
But you're not. You haven't for a month.
Right. Because a new job. But we figured out a way. That's another thing. I can't see the counselor that I have had because she only works hours that I'm at work. And I'm in Riverton. I don't have the ability with this new job, at least for the first 6 months, to leave work long enough to get here to Sandy, have a session, and go back. It's not possible. But you and I talk about things often, ideally on a daily basis. And we decided together, well, we discussed it. I knew it was my decision. I wanted to continue seeing a counselor.
No, we both said that.
We did. Okay. So it was a joint decision. Mm-hmm. I wanted to continue my therapy because I see the value in it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the last time it was like, okay,
I'm good.
I'm better now. It's just not how that works. Anyway. So anyway, I'm in therapy. I'm in a pornography recovery group. And as of today's recording, I'm 151 days sober from that, from viewing pornography, from using it. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. The withdrawals. Withdrawals were a real thing. And I have to say that because it's so frustrating. There are a lot of people who justify and say, pornography is not the same as a hardcore drug. But in a lot of ways, it really is. Because the effects that it has on your brain is almost identical. And the withdrawal symptoms are not as strong, but they are still brutal. And I went through withdrawals when I was in that other room. And that was the first time that I had really ever contemplated ending my life. It was rough. It was a dangerous 2 weeks, and I don't recommend going through withdrawals without a sponsor, without a therapist, without safety. Because it was, I mean, I looked up a way to do it. You know, it was, and I'm not going to go into any other details. It's just, I'm horrified that I got to that point, but it was so strong. The emotional pain that I was in, was brutal. And it was because my brain was so used to having these chemical releases. And then I stopped. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, the withdrawals was brutal. But let's talk about that week or the 2 weeks or whatever. What went through your mind? You said we weren't throwing the divorce word around, but what was going through your mind at the time?
Well, I just kept thinking, you have got to figure out your shit.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, because in our entire marriage, and this is something that we have talked about many different times. I am not the type of wife that's like, you better earn this much money. You better do this. You better get out there and you better. I've always been more live your life. What makes you happy? What brings you joy? Do that. I love what I do. I've always loved what I do. And if I don't love what I do, I change it so that I do love what I do. So I feel like if you're doing what you love in life, you will create the life that's meant for you. Whether that means monetary or just joy in the simple life, whatever it is. So when you lost your job, I know that was hard for you because in your head, and this is where the societal influences really start to take over.
Yeah, because I'm the man.
I have to earn the money.
Yeah.
I can't. I have to provide for my family.
Even though you'd been the breadwinner for
years.
Decades. Yeah.
Years. So I know that's where I've never agreed with that societal influence. There's a lot that I don't agree with on society and how they make dictate human lives. Drives me crazy, actually. So I know your thought. I know what your thought process was during that time for you, and it was a hard time for you. But for me, it's like, we're fine. If it means we buy less clothes for everyone, we still have clothes. We're not destitute.
Right.
If it means we buy less entertainment, less fun things, but we still have food, like, we will have food. We have a house that we live in that we can afford and still have groceries. Like, food and shelter, that's what you need in life. That's
right.
That's what you need.
Right.
All the other stuff is fun and we like it and it makes life enjoyable. But that's not what you don't need it. That's not something that has to be there. So for me during that time period, I was just kind of like, I was following your lead more than anything. Like, you got notice that you were going to be, your job was letting you go, but you could apply for your job again.
Yeah.
We had that discussion where you're like, they're going to Hunger Games us.
Yeah. We had to Hunger Games for our job.
For our jobs. Yeah. And you were so mad at your company because you're like, how dare they do it this way? This is stupid. This isn't how it should be. And, you know, I'm always devil's advocate, but I'm like,
oh, you added advocate. I think you meant to just say the devil. No, sorry. Go on. Yeah. I remember this vividly.
Yeah. Because I'm like, well, how else do you think they're going to do it? Like,
if
they pick their top six, but three of them decide no and give them the finger, then they just pissed off others that could have been great potential. So I'm like, how else are they supposed to do that?
It made me so mad.
Because you didn't like the fact that I looked at the brighter side or the other side of the coin,
yeah.
Or which I do often in our marriage. So I don't know. I was surprised at that. But
always.
But you just knew that that wasn't for you and you needed to go a different direction. And honestly, we both were feeling like I'm a very God driven, God knows us. He will, if we're listening, he will set us on the right path.
Yeah. And I did not have, this was not a high point in my spirituality at this point, but I still had, I did have a tenuous grip with my relationship with God, and I still had some communication, and I did feel that the best choice for me at the time was to part ways,
mm-hmm.
and to take the severance and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And funny story, two other people ended up doing that also. And I was adamant. I was the newest one there at 5 years. Everyone else had been there way longer. The next least senior was 9 years on the job before I got there. I was not going to try to Hunger Games against these amazing people. Well, two of them decided to leave. And then there was they ended up adding another position. So there was a job open. And I absolutely
could have gotten it.
I guess we shouldn't say would have, but I mean, it was in my area. It was my expertise. I don't know.
Could have.
That's the funny part, though. We'll get to the good parts soon, but the good parts over the last 4 months, when I was living my best life and the real details behind that, I wouldn't have had.
Right.
I wouldn't be on this journey to recovery because I wouldn't have hit my rock bottom. I wouldn't be working where I am now. Let's not say names of places, just in case. and it's a much better job in terms of a lot of things. And I wouldn't have a clean brain. I just wouldn't. I would still be addicted. And it changed my life. Sorry, continue.
No, I mean, that's the funny thing is all of those things and the way that they happened and how it happened, it was meant to be.
Yeah.
That's just that's how it had to happen for you and for our marriage and for us.
That's why we both
to get to this point.
We'll see how far right that. Nice. Well, that's why we both felt right about that decision to part ways.
Mm-hmm. I was going more off of my spirituality, my prayers, and what I was receiving, which was just trust the process.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those where I just know we're put down here to make choices. So there's no way I'm going to take choices away from somebody else. Not my place. Mm-hmm. So I had to trust that you did know what you were doing, knowing that I will always have my choices and do what I know I can do. Like, I can only control what I can control.
Yeah, and that's when you... When this all happened, and I was in the other room, and we were having conversations, our dialogue was a lot of, you kept saying, I'm done. But the way you were saying it, it still wasn't like, we're through. I mean, in my moment of going through the withdrawals and sheer panic, I was terrified that that's what it meant. But looking back, I realized you were saying, it was an ultimatum, really.
It was an ultimatum.
Yeah, you were being mistreated because I was just, my attitude was unchecked. My anger was unchecked. I didn't admit that I have anger or emotional issues. And I've still had some flare-ups since then. I don't know if that's ever going to go away. I'm going to have attitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live with... Never mind, I love you very much. You're a little antagonistic sometimes, but anyway, it's gonna continue to happen. But I knew eventually I had to make changes.
If we wanted to stay as a married couple,
yeah,
you had to make some changes because I was done. I was done pulling the weight. I was done repeating over and over, like, pull your head out, basically.
Or you would say that you're tired of not being equals. And my limited brain power, and I'm not blaming the drug use or the pornography use, but I did have limited brain power.
Well, and...
But I would see it as...
Your limiting beliefs were societal beliefs.
Yeah.
Your limiting beliefs were, that's how you were raised, that's what you believed to be, you didn't... Again, it comes down to that mindset, and we've talked about that in our previous
100%
podcast.
Mindset. Yeah,
that it's like you don't understand how I just am able to do these things.
Yeah.
Because you just can't, and yeah. I hate that word "can't."
So when you, yeah, I do too.
Now you do.
So when you, yeah, when you said we're not equals, I was like, but I put you on a pedestal. I talk about you in the most amazing ways. I don't put you down, and I didn't realize. That's not what it's about. Mm-mm. There was so much more to it, but I just was so limited from my beliefs. My mindset was in the wrong place. I mean,
that's why we got in the fight that day that you threw a garbage can at my car.
Mm-hmm.
Because in your mind, when I had asked you to do something, I was the nagging, nitpicking wife who didn't understand you had things. And that was just another one of those times where it was like, what in the world? For me, I was like, it was the mindset thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
as you said, go do this thing. Go put the sticker
on the car. The registration sticker had come in the mail, and we had decided, because he was driving a company car before, so lost his job, doesn't have a car. So it was like, well, I'm just at work 8 hours a day. If you need the car, you'll drop me off and then you'll have the car.
Yeah.
I don't need it. And so that's kind of what we had discussed. And this was literally the first day you were about to do that, was to take me to work and drop me off and keep the car.
Yeah.
And the registration sticker had come in the mail. And so I was still I mean, he was literally going to be walking out the door with me to take me to work. So I was still getting my lunch ready, and I just handed him the sticker and said, can you go put this on the car? Like, thinking I'll be right behind you because I'm coming. And you put the sticker in your pocket, walked past me, and went to your office. And I was like, what are you?
Right.
And so then I have my lunch together, and I called out to you. Are you taking me to work? And you came back out, and I was like, don't just stick that sticker in your pocket and then forget all about it. Go put it on the car.
Yeah.
And you were so mad at me for telling you what to do. And then...
because I was going to do it.
Because you were going to do it. And in yeah. your head, you weren't going to forget. But, you know, 21 years of being married to you, I was like, yeah, no, it's not. Well, that's not how that usually works in my experience.
Yeah, there's a really funny joke that men share, at least the ones who admit that we've got issues. Is that, yeah, you don't have to keep asking us to do what you asked us to do, like, every 6 months. We'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I was not happy that you had literally walked past me. And because in my mind, I'm thinking, whatever you got, whatever damn email you got that you think is that important that you had to go see it, you can't even do what you needed to do with that email in the 3 seconds you had, but you could have put the sticker on the car because you're right. going to have to come home and deal with that email anyway. You don't have time. You're taking me to work.
Yeah, that's another thing, prioritization.
Yeah, you sucked at it.
Could not prioritize properly because I couldn't look at things rationally.
Right.
And determine what realistically has to go first.
Right.
Because it would give me anxiety. So I was like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah. So yeah, I didn't even, like, I was thinking in my head, I was thinking, you got to grab a bottle of spray and a paper towel so you can clean the license plate off to put the sticker on. That was the extent. Like, it might take you a minute longer. I had not even realized you had just driven through the car wash moments before.
Yeah.
So literally all you had to do was take the sticker on the stupid license plate.
Right. And it didn't happen. And then things blew up.
Well, you went out there and did it. But it was one of those where when I was getting in the car, I was like, was that a fight? Why did that happen?
But afterwards, over the next couple of weeks, and we started to hash things out. We revisited that argument multiple times. And it doesn't, I mean, there are times I can't even remember what it was about. Until just a minute ago, when you started talking about it, I had forgotten that it was about the stupid registration sticker. Because it wasn't the thing, it was the reaction. It was the emotional blow up. And it was just such poor stress management, you know, because I had started working for this other company. I was making
nothing,
stupid money, just
nothing,
paperboy kind of money. It was bad. So I was stressed.
Yeah.
And you were still telling me it's not about that.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I know that. And that's great. But still in my head, I'm
but
like,
I have to make this work.
$400 this week. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's the thing with addiction is what happens. And I always knew when things were off. You always know when things are off.
Yeah.
But you think that you're communicating, and you think you're communicating about the right things. And you don't know what you don't know.
But there was a time when I would do the bare minimum. I would communicate enough so that it felt okay. And then we were good again.
Mm-hmm. And we were, and it was enough.
Yeah.
Cause that's the other thing is you come home from your therapies with your therapist or in the group therapies and you'll be like, you really are just amazing. You're still with me. So many other guys have this other problem. And honestly, in my head, I'm thinking, I'm not a saint. I'm not perfect. You deal with me antagonistic and all. So who am I to start casting stones? I mean, I'm not the pot. I'm not going to call the kettle black. Like, I'm not perfect. But we all want to vilify? I don't know. It's not vilify.
Well, we'll think about that.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm really sorry, but we have reached the end of this episode. Can I give a shout out? Is that all right? I have your permission.
Okay.
Shout out to my dear friend, Danny. We were mission companions together. He is one of the most delightful people on the earth. Absolute saint of a man. Amazing father. Reached out and said, you guys are killing it with your podcasts. And he listens every week. He loves it. Thanks for listening, friend. We really appreciate it. We love you.
One follower.
That's all it takes. He's the only reason I'm doing this.
Okay.
No, this is like therapy. That's the reason I'm doing this. So we will be back. For us, it's going to be 5 seconds, but for you, it's a week. So, haha. But thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Bye.